From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, November 4th, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Douglas Ridge, a new eco-conservation subdivision in Brunswick dedicated to nature-centric sustainable home design. More at douglasridge.com. And by the Dempsey Center, making life better for people managing the impact of cancer. Locations in Lewiston and South Portland. DempseyCenter.org.
A federal jury has convicted a woman who mailed a letter containing powder to the home of Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine. Suzanne Mascara of Burlington was convicted today of mailing a threatening communication. She will be sentenced at a later time. Maine will host next year's annual meeting of the National Governors Association. Governor Janet Mills says the event in Portland next August will give the local economy a boost. Mal Leary has more.
Mills says the conference will bring in hundreds of state officials and representatives of private companies who will spend money for lodging and meals. The cost for hosting the event will be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, which Mills says will be raised privately. Former Maine Governor Paul LePage pulled out of the National Governors Association, saying it was a waste of time. But Mills says the work of the NGA is important and that she has undone the damage LePage did to Maine's relationship with the organization. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And scientists, government officials, and policymakers are meeting in Portland this week for an international Gulf of Maine symposium on preparing for climate change by 2050. It'll be an enormous challenge, but Teresa Torrent of the Maine Department of Marine Resources says the idea is to confront it together.
The purpose of Gulf of Maine 2050 is to activate the talents of people around the Gulf of Maine and build a safe and productive future.
The Gulf is one of the fastest warming bodies of water on the planet, and planners are calling for rapid, dramatic actions on greenhouse gas emissions, renewable energy, and rising seas. Governor Janet Mills says Maine is committed to upholding the Paris Agreement no matter what Washington does.
We know that climate change is no longer a question. It is a fact. And I come before you to say, what can we do about it? That's the only question in my mind. How do we address it?
So far, the state of Maine has agreed to cut greenhouse gas emissions by 45% below 1990 levels over the next 10 years, and by at least 80% by 2050. The state has also made a commitment to double the use of renewable energy over the next decade. Looking at the weather tonight, clouds and some rain or even snow showers in the northwest. Lows overnight in the low 30s to low 40s north to south. Tomorrow, very light showers and highs in the low 40s to mid 50s. A Maine school bus driver has been placed on administrative leave and has been charged with operating under the influence of drugs. That's after he was stopped while driving the Biddeford High School field hockey team back from a game this weekend. Robbie Feinberg has details.
According to Maine State Police Lieutenant Eric Baker, longtime Biddeford School Department bus driver Richard Tangway was pulled over at around 8 p.m. on Saturday night as he was heading south on I-95 with about 30 students and staff on board. Baker says a trooper saw several signs of erratic driving.
That's when he observed the bus going southbound, exceeding the posted speed limit, more than what I would call normal. And he also saw erratic operation of changing lanes and kind of staying between lanes, I guess is what we should say.
Baker says the trooper pulled the bus over, then asked Tangway to perform a standard field sobriety test. After a subsequent breath test and exam from a drug recognition expert, Baker says police determined Tangway was under the influence of drugs but not alcohol. Baker declined to say what specific drugs were allegedly detected on the test.
That's part of the investigation, and we'll leave that for the district attorney's office.
Police say Tangway was also charged with driving to endanger and endangering the welfare of a child. In a message to students, Superintendent Jeremy Ray said the district is working with police and investigating the incident, and that, quote, student safety is our first priority. According to Maine law, school bus drivers are required to pass a yearly physical exam and are required to disclose any medications they're using. Ray says that the Biddeford School Department additionally requires randomized drug testing of transportation staff.
I think all school departments and everybody works really hard to make sure that everybody's safe at all times, whether that's through regulations or policies that are put into place. And I think in this situation, we just need to learn the facts, learn the details at the end of this, and then make decisions from that going forward and not make decisions without all the facts being in play.
Ray says that Tangwe has been placed on administrative leave during the investigation. Police say Tangwe's first court appearance is scheduled for January. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
The Library of Congress's American Folklife Center today staged an oral history event in Portland focused on veterans. It included an open training on how to capture and record veteran stories and get them preserved by what's called the Veterans History Project. Maine Congresswoman Shelley Pingree also presented several service medals posthumously to the family of a World War II airman. She says the presentation of these medals, even years later, can be a meaningful moment for the families.
It sparks a conversation. It sometimes heals a difficult moment that someone went through in their service. And it just kind of brings everybody together.
The medals presented today belong to Airman Anthony Ornatek, who was shot down over Nazi-occupied France and survived for months behind enemy lines. The story of Ornatek's harrowing journey and his ultimate escape into Switzerland has since been documented by his family. Maine Public's Fred Bever has more.
In late December 1943, Staff Sergeant Anthony A. Ornatek and the rest of the crew of a B-17 bomber known as the Raunchy Wolf were flying back to Britain after a successful bombing run that targeted a ball-bearing plant in France. A 23-year-old waist gunner, Ornatek was on his second airborne mission when the bomber encountered a squadron of German Messerschmitt fighter planes over Calais.
They lost three of the four engines, and the plane was going down slowly. And he and most of the crew bailed at 1,500 feet.
Ornatek's son, known as Little Tony in the family, says most of the 10-person crew made it safely to Earth and were taken in by the French resistance. At first, they had no way to contact Allied forces, and back home in North Chicago, Ornatek's mother, Stella, received a telegram from the U.S. Adjutant General James Ulio.
It says, "The Secretary of War desires me to express his deep regret that your son, Staff Sergeant Anthony A. Ornatek, has been reported missing in action since 30 December over Germany. If further details or other information are received, you will be promptly notified. ULIO, the Adjutant General."
It would be 4 months before she heard anything more. Meanwhile, her son and his crewmates were on a perilous adventure in the farmlands of German-occupied France in January of 1944.
He and his crew members met up with a farmer in a barn who exchanged clothes with them and gave them bicycles. And they rode on bicycles. He escorted them and guided them to the next village, where they stayed for a month or so.
They stayed mostly indoors during daylight hours, moving from village to village. He lived with a painter, a beet sugar contractor, a farmer, and other members of the Refractaires, the resistors. During a longer-term stay with one French family, Ornatek did venture outdoors.
My father worked with them in the fields, probably, around the barnyard, you know, cutting wood or whatever, doing whatever chores were necessary, just to make sure he fit in. Because don't forget, there weren't a lot of French men around. So to have a Frenchman there was suspect. And so my dad did the best he could to fit in.
The winter wore on, and there were close calls.
And one evening, the farmer's daughter brought him down to the village, to the local bistro. And she introduced my father to the innkeeper, the bartender, as this American GI. And the bartender began laughing horrendously because the bistro was full of German officers.
A quick exit ensued. In March, Ornatek and other soldiers, including Frenchmen, started a trek towards the border with neutral Switzerland. They traveled on foot, by bus, and train, but mostly by truck, at one point colliding with, then escaping from a German vehicle. Many of Ornatek's companions were caught along the way. On May 5th, a few of them started a final push toward a cottage near the border where they were to meet a guide to help them make the crossing. Along the way, they met a young French woman who told them to turn back.
Because the Germans had surrounded the cottage, had killed the guide, and they were in great danger. My dad and another guy decided to go on by themselves in the woods. And through strictly dead reckoning, using his compass and a map, and occasionally speaking with a few French people, they made their way to Switzerland. My dad did. Excuse me. I think I did make it. And my dad said he did hear the machine gun fire in the woods that night. But he made it to Switzerland safely.
To Boncourt, Switzerland. A week later, the Red Cross sent a telegram to his mother saying that her boy was safe. He spent several months in Switzerland learning to play chess, to speak more French, and making a few purchases.
And I had the wristwatch he bought in Switzerland to replace the one he lost when he parachuted out. Yeah. Yeah. It still works.
Anthony A. Ornatek served the rest of his tour back in Illinois, where he eventually married and raised a family, including little Tony, who's now a retired accountant living in Cape Elizabeth. He pieced together this story of his father's service from past conversations, family documents, and a report that Airman Ornatek wrote soon after making it across the Swiss border in 1944. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And you can read Airman Ornatek's own account of his journey through hostile territory at mainepublic.org. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock, where Hydro-Québec's president and CEO will answer questions about the controversial CMP corridor project and whether that proposed transmission line would reduce greenhouse gas emissions. I'm Nora Flaherty.